And we're talking this hour about fat, and we're switching from trans fat and omega-6 fat, and we're zeroing in on omega-3 fat. Susan Allport is the author of The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them Out This Year, from the University of California Press. So, Susie, when we left, we were getting into that big discussion about trans fat and omega-3s. But what I want to turn to now is this whole question of, when people realize that omega-3s, first of all, were different from omega-6s, and then they might have, these are classifications of drugs. And again, it goes back to this issue of bonds that we were talking about. But maybe tell us the difference between omega-3 and omega-6, and when people started first to realize that they should be thinking about omega-3 fatty acids.
All different questions, but I'm sorry to have given you such a big mouthful before.
That's all right.
When they first realized that omega-3s were important were when two Danish researchers went to Greenland to investigate rumors that they had heard about the Eskimo having very little heart disease despite the fact that they eat tons of fatty seal and whale. And when they analyzed the tissues of the Eskimos, as well as the tissues of the foods that they ate, they found that those foods were extremely rich in certain long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. These are DHA, people are familiar with that one, and EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, were far greater in the tissues of the Eskimos, maybe seven times greater than they were in the tissues of Danes that ate lots of cheeses and meats. And people didn't realize that that was very significant until this story hooked up with the prostaglandin story. And the prostaglandins are important cell messengers that were discovered to be made from unsaturated fats, the fats that are in the membranes themselves, the fats that we were being spoken about before. And they're taken out of the membranes, and they're used as messengers to affect the behavior of cells around surrounding them. So these prostaglandins affect everything from inflammation to blood clotting to cell death to blood pressure, all these different very important parameters. And the Danish researchers knew about this, and everybody knew that these messengers were made from a omega-6 fat called arachidonic acid. And they said, well, we wonder if maybe this fat that we found in the Eskimos could also be turned into these messengers. And indeed, it was. So you have these contrasting fats in our cell membranes, one of which, if it's snipped out, it causes inflammation. The other one causes much, much less inflammation. Now, where the story really gets interesting is where people began to realize where these fats originate. As it turns out that the omega-3s originate not in fish, as most of us believe, but in the green leaves of plants. They're the primary fats in the chloroplasts of green leaves, and there they enable the plants to carry out photosynthesis, the capturing of photons to be turned into carbohydrates, which is the basis of all life on Earth, and which is the speediest activity that plants carry out. And then you have the second family of fats, which are much more predominant in the seeds of plants, and those are the omega-6s. And they're turned into omega-3s at the time of germination, but they're much less susceptible to oxidation, so plants can store them in their seeds, and they're not going to go off as quickly as those omega-3s.
Oxidation, in other words, they get rancid, or they...
They get turned. So and that's why those omega-3s are a problem for the food producers, because they are more easily oxidized, because they have these extra double bonds.
Right.
They've got extra double bonds all the way through, and it's this one extra double bond way at the end of the molecule, which is right in the middle of a cell membrane, and that gives that membrane all kinds of flexibility, which allows all the enzymes and the proteins in that membrane to move much more quickly and rapidly, and to send nerve signals, as they do in brains, to capture light molecules, as they do in the eye, to beat regularly in the heart. So that's where this story is really interesting, that it's this contrast between the fats of the seeds, the fats that predominate in seeds, and the fats that predominate in leaves. And that's the story that we've slowly been putting together over many years.
Well, let's take a call now from one of our listeners about this, because I'm sure there's a lot of questions. And let's go to John in Adrian, Michigan. John, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I have a question about my mother would never use lard, but she had to admit that one of my ancient aunts, long gone, used lard to make pie crust.
Uh-huh.
And they were superior pie crust. And in fact, I've heard this from a lot of other people, that the only way to make pie crust is to use lard. Now, where does this fit into the equation?
Okay. What about that, Susie Allpoint?
Well, it's so interesting because a pig that's out in the wild and or is pasture-fed, free-range pig is going to be pulling up lots of roots and eating lots of greens or insects that have eaten green. And its fats are actually going to be richer in these omega-3s than the fats of a corn-fed, grain-fed pig.
Hmm.
And its fats could actually be a lot healthier for you than these very high omega-6 fats that we have been using instead of those more natural fats ever since we got this story into our head that we needed to reduce animal fats, which was a misguided notion.
Mm.
Animals really are what they eat just as we are what they eat. And once we understand this idea that the real key is this difference between fats of leaves, fats of seeds, that one speeds you up, one slows you down, we'll be able to put all these other stories into place. We'll be able to see that the trans fat really is about eliminating those fats of the leaves, that the fish story, we're in a real quandary now because we've been told that our way of beefing up on the omega-3 fats is to eat fish, but we're running out of fish. Fish are contaminated. If we know, if we really understand that that it's the fats of seed, the fats of leaves where those fish fats are coming from, then we'll have many other ways of making up for this nutritional deficiency, which is a very important one, in which, you know, everyone recognizes the omega-3 story.
I think it's time for a high kelp diet. But anyway,
yes.
Let's take another call now and go to Carl in Tracy, California. Carl, welcome to the program. Uh-oh, we're having a little trouble hearing you there, Carl. Hold on a second. Is it something I've done? I'm sorry, that's not working. Sorry, Carl. I guess we didn't hear you there. Let's try another call. And how about going to Rachel in Phoenix, Arizona? Rachel, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. This is validation that you have this program because I've been obsessing about partially hydrogenated oil and omegas for years.
Good.
But I just wanted to ask, is there a way, and I'm not sure if this guest knows this answer to this question, but is there a way to counteract the partially hydrogenated oil that's already in your system?
Hmm.
Through nutrition, through exercise, I was just curious about that.
Hmm. Interesting question. Susie, can you address that?
Yeah, over time, all of those fats will be replaced by healthier fats if you just start right now from this day consuming fats with no trans in them and consuming fats with a better ratio of threes to sixes.
Okay.
Yeah, just over time, those fats will work their way out of your system. It may take a while, but depending on how much of the partially hydrogenated oils you've been eating, but it doesn't sound like a lot.
Okay, let's try another call now from Phil in Eugene, Oregon. Phil, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I enjoy this program every week. Many decades ago, in fact, I read some simple advice that said the harder the fat is, the stiffer the fat is at body temperature, the worse it is for you, the more likely it's to stick in your arteries. And the softer it is, the runnier it is, the safer it is for you and the better it is for you. That seems to cover all the cases that have been discussed today. Is that still good advice?
Hmm.
Yeah, it's very good advice up to a point because the omega-6s and the omega-3s look about the same. They both have about the same melting points, so you can't distinguish them on the melting points. And that's interesting. They actually have some additional chemical properties that they have with these certain kinds of double bonds, which I won't go into mm-hmm. now, but that makes them more valuable, that makes the threes more valuable than the sixes, even though they'll both be liquids at pretty much the same temperature.
Okay, that's good. Let's take one more call now from Andy in Utah. Andy, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
I was just wondering, I've been taking flax seed, and I put it in yogurt, and then I take a flax seed oil pill. Am I doing myself any good?
You're doing yourself great. you could also, I don't know what kinds of oils you cook with, but if you reduce the amount of really high omega-6 oils, you'll give those omega-3s a better chance of getting into your tissues.
Okay. So if I take a flax oil pill that's manufactured,
right,
and then I take raw flax seed and put it in my yogurt, so which would be the best?
Any of those. You can get these omega-3s from a variety of means. Flax seed is great. But as I said, you should also pay attention to what oil you're using in the cooking. And if it's safflower or sunflower, those really high omega-6 oils, they'll swamp those omega-3s in that flaxseed pill if you're using that.
So, okay. So we cook mostly oil, olive oil.
Yeah, olive oil's good, canola oil. Yep, those are good oils to cook with.
Okay. Hey, Susie, thanks, Andy. You know what I was wondering? A lot of kids when they were, well, not kids, but people closer to my age probably, who when they were young were forced to eat cod liver oil. Is that thought to be good? That was supposed to be high in omega-3.
Yeah, it's very high in omega-3s, and it's interesting, though, because a lot of that oil that we were given tasted awful, and it tasted awful because it was oxidized.
Mm.
And oxidized oils aren't good for you, whether they're high in omega-3s or not. So it may have been of some benefit if it was fresh and your mother thought to keep it in the refrigerator. But if she didn't, it probably didn't help us too much. But yes, that's a really interesting phenomenon. Yeah.
We're talking with Susan Allport, the author of The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them. I'm Joe Palca, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I want to get to the other part of the title of your book, Why Were Omega-3s Removed from the Western Diet? What was that? Was it all just convenience because they wanted to keep things on shelves longer and they couldn't use these oils that became rancid faster?
Right. I mean, that's where they connect with this trans story, is because when those oils, the omega-3s are in seeds in varying degrees, and they really present a problem for the food producers because they are the things that are most readily oxidized. So they came up, first of all, they totally hydrogenated these oils. That began at the beginning of the 20th century, and they eliminated any of the polyunsaturates. And then they decided that they would just eliminate the omega-3s and leave the omega-6s, because by that time they knew that omega-6s were essential for health. They didn't know that the 3s were essential for health. So then they came upon that technique of partial hydrogenation, and that created more 6s and trans, removed the 3s. Well, it's very hard to distinguish which is causing the problem, the 3s right. or the 6s or the trans. But then they were also, the title says they were removed, but in reality they've been swamped by the amount of 6s in our diet. That has really soared over the past 100 years or so, from 7 grams a day per person a day to about 16 or 20 grams per person a day. And that's what the biggest change has been. Trans has gone up since the 40s and 50s, and the spike has been parallel, but it's at a much lower level.
Okay, I think we have time for one more call, so let's go to Catherine in Oxford, Mississippi. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I simply want to ask, as being a vegetarian who doesn't eat anything with eyes or antennae, including fish, what's the best way I can get some omega-3s and without taking supplements? And I'll take my call off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
Well, you can always add flaxseed to your breads, and you can use canola oil for your baking, because canola happens to be have a really good ratio of the two fats. And another great way is to eat the omega-3 enriched eggs. And these are eggs from chickens that have been given a diet that is rich in omega-3s. It could be either flaxseed, or it could be algae, or it could be fish meal. And the chickens put those omega-3s into their eggs for the same reason that they're in the breast milk of women. It's to provide for the brain development of the next generation. In the case of chickens, it's the chicks. In the case of women, it's the child. But they're there for that reason, and it's a really good way to get those. A chicken, an egg from a chicken that is a free-ranging chicken that's out there just foraging on its own, eating as much as many worms as it wants and picking up all the greens that it wants, will have as many omega-3s in it as a piece of fish, which is an astonishing thing. So by changing that part of our food supply, changing the eggs and the nutrient content of those eggs, we've really made a very major change.
Okay, very briefly, very briefly.
Yeah, okay.
Have you changed your diet?
I have changed my diet. I've changed my diet, and I've even had my blood tested from some of these companies that have given me free tests. And after 3 or 4 years of changing my diet, I'm about at the level of a Mediterranean or Greek. I'm not down to where the Japanese are, who eat even more fish.
I see. Well, all right. I guess someday I'll have to come and have dinner with you, and you can show me what the right thing
please
to do,
do
is. Anyway, Susie Allport, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Susan Allport is a science writer. Her new book is The Queen of Fats, Why Omega-3s Were Removed from the Western Diet and What We Can Do to Replace Them. Marty Curcius is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Linda Mack in Washington, Neil Rausch and Manoli Wetherill in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Keem Molesky. If you have comments or questions, write to us. There's a new address. Oh, it's not here. This is the old address. Oh, well, never mind. I won't tell you what it is. There is a new address. You had to listen to the other hour to know what it is. For internet mail, the address is scifry@npr.org. Check out sciencefriday.com for more information and links to today's program. You can listen to past editions of Science Friday online or take them with you as a podcast. For NPR News in Washington, I'm Joe Palca.